Welcome to the Let's Talk Divots podcast. We are your women's professional golf podcast, bringing you representatives, caddies, players, and anything to do with women's professional golf from inside the ropes. Please check us out on all social media platforms at Let's Talk Divots. Send us an email, ask us some questions, throw us some recommendations of who you'd like to hear on the show. Letstalkdivots@gmail.com is where we can be reached. We had a fantastic show today. South Africa came at us. We had Ashley and Dave Buhai, a player-caddy combination, although they're not really a combination anymore, but they travel the road together. Dave works on Madeline Sagstrom's bag, and Ashley is one of South Africa's brightest stars. Please sit back and enjoy this episode. Ashley and Dave Buhai joining us from Johannesburg, South Africa. Going to a little bit of detail, if you don't mind, about the lockdown. I know you just discussed 7 weeks. You guys have been tied up pretty tight and no golf course is open.
Yeah, so we went into lockdown literally 2 weeks after the first case was discovered in South Africa. They shut things pretty quickly, pretty extensive as well. Like, couldn't leave your house, couldn't exercise outside. Could only leave her house for groceries, essentials, and medical reasons. And then last week we went into phase four. You can exercise outside for a few hours a day. But other than that, it's pretty much stay at home, work from home for those who can, and only leave for essentials.
You mean prior to phase four, even if you're in your own home, you can't go out in your backyard and hit into the net or anything?
I know you can go out in your backyard, but not outside of your...
Literally, just off the lawn. Yeah. You're not allowed to. Yeah.
If you wanted to go for a run, you couldn't do that. You couldn't exercise or be outside it. Other than that,
is there any forecast? Like, I mean, because we're obviously a different climate, Canada, or population's pretty low. And I mean, I played golf yesterday. I'm playing again tomorrow. We're the lucky ones. I know Ronnie played on the weekend in California. Is there any like forecast on that sort of thing? Because I think there's going to be some, you know, when and hope we do go back, there's definitely some people in some different parts of the world that that are at an advantage getting out, able to be out on golf courses and stuff playing.
Yeah, from what we're hearing, you know, our governing bodies here, Golf RSA and the PGA of South Africa, they put a proposal to the government last week, you know, explaining how obviously golf can be played while socially distancing and all that. So they're hoping golf will reopen in the end of May or first week of June at least. But we haven't had any communication other than that. And yeah, I think it's a long road ahead for everybody.
Oh, no kidding. And golf is seriously, specifically, like when they finally opened up here in Canada, it was so easy that you're like, man, I'm never around anybody on the golf course. Like, you know, maybe we make a conscious effort of being not next to each other on the tee box a little more, but like, you're literally like, you're so far from anybody at all times, especially where I am in the bush, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's like me and my mates, we play on opposite sides of the fairway.
Yeah, well, so are you a lefty or a righty then? Because I'm a righty. I played with my lefty buddy and we both hit a fade. So we were yesterday, we were 100 yards apart at sometimes, right?
I'm a righty. It can go anywhere. I stick to caddying. It's a lot easier on the other side of the bag, you know?
It's a lot easier. So Ronnie and I have both been to South Africa. I've spent lots, like over a half a year in that continent, in that part of the world. Love South Africa. So wild in some parts. Obviously, the landscapes, you know, it's a little edgy in places. Talk to us a bit about, you know, people who haven't been to South Africa, maybe growing up in South Africa. You're both South African by the sounds of the accent there. Dave, you as well?
Yeah, I mean, we're both born and bred in Johannesburg. We grew up about 10 minutes from each other, and then we met at a golf academy 13 years ago now. But yeah, I mean, the one thing about South Africa, and especially Johannesburg, we have, I think, some of the best climate in the world. You know, during the summer, your hottest day is probably going to get to 30 degrees Celsius, and in the winter, I mean, right now we're supposedly in winter, and our days have still been 15 to 18 degrees Celsius. Fantastic golf courses for such a small country, And then obviously what people think when they think Africa and South Africa safari, that's why people come to visit. But you've got all your, you've got beach, you've got game parks, you've got mountains. We don't have snow, but other than that, you can do everything you want to in South Africa.
Specifically, I actually avoided Joburg, not to touch on anything political, but when I was there, they're like, you don't need to go to Joburg. You're just you might just run into some trouble there. So I never actually made it to your home city.
Yeah, I mean, there's not Joburg, and obviously people, you know, unfortunately, it's like you see on the news across the world, they always show the worst things. But when you're from here and you're homebred, you know, and it's in your blood, it's home.
Yeah, and you also, you know, which places to go, where not to go, you know. We live in our own little bubble, you know, it's which is perfectly safe. I mean, obviously you're going to have your problems here or there, but you know, the bad areas are probably 30-minute drive away, and you know, a lot of tourists want to go see the shanty towns and stuff like that. But we I've driven a few friends past us to show them, but I mean, I wouldn't recommend going through them. But
yeah, we live a good life in here. No, everybody, like I said, sees the bad stuff, but for us, it's home and it's where family is. And like I said, we have great restaurants, great golf courses. You know, it's very first world in a lot of it parts.
Not slandering on South Africa at all. I really love it. But so growing up in South Africa as a youngster, you've obviously got, you know, Gary Player comes from there. There seems to be like a pretty good golf culture. Can you talk about that a little bit? We know that female golf maybe not be so prominent there. Just talk about growing up golfing in South Africa.
Yo, when I started playing, you know, there were only boys playing. I could become a member of my golf course at 10 years old, and I was the only girl. And then every holiday, during our school holidays, we would have the Junior Golf Foundation, where you would play 36-hole tournaments 3 to 4 times a week. And again, I'd be the only girl playing. But it didn't ever bother me. You know, I grew up playing with the likes of Shaul Schwartzel, his brother Ati Schwartzel, Louis and them. They were all a bit above me in age-wise. But like I've said, we're very blessed for golf courses here. The amount of golf courses we have, and they're just unbelievable condition. And yeah, it was just always in my blood, and I loved it from a very young age.
We had quite a good story growing up. You were quite a stud prodigy golfer out there, breaking records left and right. I mean, women's records, maybe there weren't so many, but still, props to you for being the best out there.
Do you think that came from growing up playing with a lot of the men, Ashley?
I think so. I mean, I was playing junior tournaments, like, you know, 10 and 11. I was obviously playing off ladies' tees and that, but still being able to compete against the guys is just that competitiveness. And then I started playing open amateur women tournaments around 13 and 14. And then, yeah, I mean, we had a really good run of talent for a while. I mean, we even won the World Amateur Championships in 2016. No, 2017, sorry.
Six.
Sorry, six. What are we? 2006, oh my gosh. I turned pro in 2007. Yeah, so for a while, we were really strong at one point. But unfortunately, yeah, there's not too many female golfers coming out of South Africa at the moment.
What about your background, Dave? You guys met at a golfing school. Were you trying to go for pro as well?
Yeah, I was trying to once upon a time. I tried for close to 2 years, and then just figured I just wasn't good enough. And I also got a bit disheartened every time I play with Ash. She'd also start playing off the men's, and she'd still beat me. So yeah, that didn't sit well. So then I figured, nah, I'm going to try something else. So I started working, and I worked for about, we did the long distance relationship thing for 3 years. And Ash's previous caddy, he broke his ankle during motocross. And she said, can you get some leave off work? And I said, yeah, sure. I've never been overseas. And yeah, that's 11 years ago. So I'm still on leave. I'm enjoying it.
So you started off looping for Ashley?
Yeah, yeah. So I looped for Ash for 7-8 years?
8 years,
yeah. Learned to bite my tongue a lot. And we decided when we got married, we would split it up because I just felt there was just too much responsibility on Ash's shoulders. And also, I think when you're with somebody for that long, you start to say things that you wouldn't normally say to another player. You know, like after a while, you know, from me being with Ash for 8 years, it looks pretty easy, you know. So when she didn't make a mistake, I'd be like, you know, what was that, you know? And then I realized when I go back and play with my mates, how difficult it is, you know. So, yeah, it was a good fun. It was a good ride, especially starting off canning in Europe, you know, just, you know, feeling the waters and stuff like that. And these loads of stories that came out of Europe. And then obviously when we got to America, I felt it was a lot more professional, obviously a lot more money in that, and it was more business-like. But yeah, so it's been a great journey so far.
Yeah, I think it's a very good call to get off her bag and let her. I've seen you on the fairways watching the leaderboards, and Ashley's playing well, and she played very well last season. But I see you checking it out, and I'd give you some updates what she's doing and stuff like that. But I think, too much 24/7 all the time, especially when you work together. You got to have something at home to talk about. So I think that was good. Were you by any chance? I know Ashley made the Olympics for South Africa or for Africa in 2016. Were you on her bag then? Who did you have, Ashley, for your caddy?
Dave caddied for me then. That was our last 2016 was our last full season together. Yeah. We got married at the end of 2016. And then from 2017, he started caddying. He first started out with Pernille Lindberg. We haven't looked back. It's been a really good switch out for us. We still get to travel and be together at the end of the day. And, you know, if one of you has a bad week and another one has a good week, it kind of evens out. So not all the responsibilities are on one's shoulders.
How was the whole Olympic experience for you too?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was amazing to be able to experience it, obviously with Dave as your spouse, and, you know, first time golf was in the Olympics for so long. And, you know, obviously you go there to compete, to try win a medal, but it's weird. I always say, because once you're out of the top three, it's kind of, what are you playing for? It's different to every other week where there's always something to play for. Either you're trying to make the cut, or you're trying to finish top 25 or win the tournament. But for us to be there, you know, be part of an experience and take it all in and watch how all these other athletes train. And also, you know, how they work their butt off for 4 years to compete in this one event. And I remember thinking, oh, well, I didn't play great that week, but I got on a plane and I went and I played the Canadian Open the next week and played for $2.5 million and life is good. They have to wait or train for years. So, but to rub shoulders with some greats, it was a very cool experience.
Yeah, you must have been very proud just representing your country. I'm sure you could probably got some accolades from Gary Player. Did he reach out or anything like that for the Olympics?
Well, he was our captain for the Olympics, so he was with us throughout the whole week. I've known Gary throughout my career, and I'd played with him before, but to have someone like him mentor you and be there on the first tee, obviously he's so patriotic about South Africa, and so are we. I actually wasn't putting too good that week, and he must have spent an hour with me after the one round chipping and putting. It's something that I'll remember forever.
What a absolutely amazing thing to be able to be a part of. Is that, like, can you give us some insight from Gary, or like something really inspirational that he's said or done to you over the years? Obviously, you just said an hour of chipping and putting with him, but anything there was sounds so cool.
Yeah, you know, he's so creative, and that's kind of the course we played at the Olympics in Rio. It was kind of a linksy feel, so you had to have a lot of imagination, and it was super tight lies, and, you know, it was just about being more creative, using your imagination, and playing different shots. It wasn't very technical. It was just more like kind of see it, feel it, and trust it, and when somebody like Gary Player tells you that, you're going to believe in yourself.
So we just, like, a story, the one night we go for dinner in the village, and Gary's staying in the village, and the amount of people that knew him that obviously were non-golfers, and how many people came up to him and asked him for a photo, and he was the exact same with every single person. And it was incredible to see how he just gave the time of day to every single person, or athlete. Because I definitely wasn't an athlete there, but somehow I got in the village. But anyway,
What about Ernie? Is Ernie like in any way involved with South African golfers? He just not reached that age yet. Have you had any experience with him at all?
Yeah, I've had experience with Ernie through my amateur career and junior career. I've met him a bunch of times, and you know, if I see him today, we would see each other and say hi and chat. But he's very involved in South Africa. He has an Ernie Els Foundation. It's based down in George, where he keeps his home now in South Africa. And it helps underprivileged kids, and it puts them through school, through playing golf, and, you know, helps them make a career either out of golf or move on to university and have a degree. So he's very involved in trying to make a difference out here.
Very cool. So you grow up playing in South Africa. You win some tournaments early on in South Africa. Go into the LET. You do well over there. Now, what's the biggest difference between, like, let's say the LET and then transitioning over into the LPGA Tour?
I think for me, it was, you know, I kind of went over by myself as well. I was 18 years old. The transition to Europe was easy for me because being in South Africa to Europe, it's one flight. Similar time change, and a lot of the people and friends of mine that were playing on the LET, we played amateur golf together. Even though we're from different parts of the world, we kind of all turned pro at the same time and hit the LET, and it was cool. We traveled together, so it was very much like a family. And then when I went over to the LPGA, I was the only South African, 18, 19 years old, very lonely, trying to find your way. It took some adjusting, and obviously I just say, you know, it was a bit more competitive out on the LPGA. And so it should be. It's what you're doing for your career and how you're trying to make money. But over the years, you learn to get on with it. And now that I'm a lot older, I mean, I love being out on the LPGA and I have a good bunch of friends out there. So life's good.
So it sounds like you both had a little bit more familiarity working in Europe. And Dave, you said there's some pretty good stories from working in Europe and a little bit more business when you got over into America. Is there maybe a good story or two that you want to share with us?
Well, who's the show going to? What age groups? I'll start there.
It's the internet. There's no you can swear on this podcast. It's not going to kids. Let's go there. Let's say that.
I'll tell you my best story was. Was the first year I started caddying, and so I'm trying to make friends and just trying to meet people on tour. And we play a tournament in Turkey, and coming from Joburg, you know, like I haven't seen much besides just South Africa and that. And we stay in this 5-star hotel, but it's got 2 nightclubs in the hotel, and it's all inclusive. And I'm thinking at that stage, I think I was 21 or something, and I'm thinking this is unbelievable, free booze. And anyway, I got a bit carried away on the Tuesday night, and the Wednesday was the pro-am. And
wait, he got carried away, and he was he'd never met Laura Davies. And all of a sudden, he was around Laura, and he was like, I can't believe I'm having a beer here with Laura Davies.
Yeah, yeah, oh my God, you know. So, and anyway, we ended up going to the nightclub, I think it was about 1 or 2 in the morning. And then Laura said she's going to bed, and I'm like, okay, if Laura's going to bed, I'll go to bed. But now I think it was my first or second week out with Ash. I'm 100% going to be in the dog box here. So I'm thinking of ways how to get out of this, whatever. So I thought it was a good idea to get to the hotel room door and take all my clothes off in the corridor of the hotel and then go in. Left my underwear on, yeah. But I thought it was a good idea then go in, and if Ash woke up, I'll just say, no, listen, I've just been in the toilet, you know. And it worked. Luckily, it did work. And I got him to bed, and I just said, no, I was in the toilet. Why are you so late? No, I was in the toilet. And the next day, I was out with another player's, Jeff Artis, who's married to Rebecca Artis. They used to be out on tour together. And he was not in a good way on the other side of the fairway. But yeah, that was my tale, one of the first weeks out, caddy.
And not to mention one of the first weeks, my second year caddy, if I did that with my second week with my new employer, I couldn't imagine. I think you got the benefit of being partners, spousal partners beforehand.
Yeah.
You definitely get away with a lot more caddying for your partner, that's for sure. You would have been fired long ago.
How are Dave's numbers on that Thursday first round?
But Thursday was fine, yeah. Thursday, I was all business. I was all business, right?
He had recovered by Thursday.
Are you in meters? Or are you guys work off meters, just out of curiosity?
Meters. So that was also a bit of a transition from Europe to the States, is because in Europe, we had the option of yards or meters books. So I never had to change. And then when I went over to play the LPGA, we didn't have the option of meters book. So Dave had to convert every book every week from yards into meters. And the first year he didn't caddy for me, they started giving us meters books.
Oh. So is that relatively new then? Because I work in yards, but even though we're on the metric system in Canada, but all my players have been in meters, and people ask me like, is that difficult? But because the books are in meters, you just kind of work the number, right? So it's like, it's kind of irrelevant. It's like, oh, her 8-iron goes 130 meters, whether that's yards or meters, it doesn't matter. But that sounds like a lot of work beforehand. So what year did that actually start?
They started giving us the option of in
2017. I read an article, Ashley, about you working on some, and again, I'm just totally paraphrasing, and I'd like you to maybe go into it a little bit, maybe something for the listeners to potentially work on. There was something that changed your putting when you were struggling a little bit, about like a red zone and a green zone. Do you have any idea what I'm talking about? And could you tell the listeners about something that maybe might be able to help them at home, and maybe just a little bit about that backstory?
Yeah, it has more to do with your shots into the greens and off the tee box and shot selection. My coach and I, you know, worked it out. Case of moving into the zones that you're comfortable with. So obviously, you know, if a pin's 3 from the left, you're not going to be going at that pin. You're going to be trying to hit it 20-25 foot right of the pin, but that would be a yellow zone. A red zone would be left of that pin because that's no good, and a green zone would be straight at it if you're comfortable. And it's just more about playing within yourself. You know, some weeks you're going to feel on and you feel like you can take on shots that you wouldn't take on other weeks. So it helped me definitely throughout, you know, the middle of last year. It was just about rebuilding a little bit. And then once you start to get your confidence back up, you find that you go more from a yellow zone to a green zone and you can stay more aggressive. So it's just it's a way to course management, and also, you know, which course your eye more than others and where you can be aggressive and where not to be.
So are you saying to not fire at every single flag out there if you're an amateur golfer? Maybe use the red light, green light, yellow light philosophy?
Very good idea.
Yeah, okay.
That's a good idea. You know, we talk about hitting into big spaces. So you look at where's your big space. That's always going to be a yellow zone. Where's a green space? You know, sometimes if a flag is 3 from the left, your green zone is going to be 3-4 meters right, and your yellow zone is going to be 8 meters right of that flag. Green zone doesn't necessarily mean straight at the pin. It's all about where you see it and where you feel you can get the most aggressive.
That's what really separates the amateurs from the pros, because me being an amateur, I'm a hero golfer. I go for that one green zone. I know no other color but green, 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 and I go, 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 and sometimes it comes out, sometimes not so much, but it's such a mental, stressful game out there. And I'm looking at the pro level, the way you guys analyze everything, the numbers, the wind, the bird chirping, just it's phenomenal, the mental stress that's out there for an amateur golfer. I think I'm good at 15 holes after that. It's anybody's guess.
15 in a row is not bad, bud. Do the birds chirping actually get you off your game or what?
Oh, I'm not kidding. When I grew up out of airport right next to my golf course that I grew up, airplanes be flying by, and I'm thinking, are they watching me in the sky? I have no mental game whatsoever. Physically, I can play the game. Mentally, I'm like a grammar school kid.
That's funny.
Ronnie thinks he's got the Goodyear blimp above him at all times. So
that's right.
So you start out on the LET and you win a bunch out there. How's the depth of the fields from like the LET to the LPGA? Obviously you said it's, you know, that's where the best in the world goes, but so like how tough is it to win on the LPGA coming from like another stage that of professional women's golf that you've been able to win on?
I mean, I think winning on the LPGA is obviously the ultimate. It's the strongest and best players in the world. But, you know, I was really grateful that I played in Europe and I got an invite and won my third event out, which helped me. I didn't ever have to go to Q school. And then I kind of bounced back, tried to play both tours for 3-4 years, and it got a bit difficult. So 2010, I went back to Europe and just basically pushed the restart button and started from scratch. And then we won in Portugal in 2011. And then, yeah, from 2014, being back full-time in the LPGA. And, you know, I've come within touching distance, you know, 2 or 3 times. So it just shows how difficult it is to win. But even when you're in contention, there's no thrill like it. It's fantastic.
Top 5 at the British Open last year. That was pretty good.
You know, in terms of my best finish for the depth of the field, that was my best finish. You know, I was leading off the 2 rounds, played in the final group the last 2 rounds. Fantastic learning experience. I felt like, you know, I didn't lose it. The others just played better. But, you know, 2 years ago, I got really close at Green Bay, finished 2nd by 1 shot. And in Blue Bay, I finished 2nd to Shanshan by a few shots. So, you know, I've been close, and hopefully one of these days I can pull it off. But it just shows how difficult it is out there on the LPGA. The depth is much deeper than the LET.
Obviously, experience is so important. The more you can put yourself in that situation, you know, the more you figure out how to deal with it, I think. But, like, what's it like sleeping on a lead at a major championship, especially going into the weekend?
It was weird. Like, I really wasn't nervous at the British Open. And I feel that's kind of what happens those weeks when it's meant to be and things go your way. I always feel, for me, there's always been this calmness that takes over. And the prep that you've done over the last few weeks, you always know that good week's coming. And then it just tends to happen. And I remember my caddy even asking me, we're warming up in the 2nd round. And he's like, Asher, you're okay? And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm all good. He's like, you're just so quiet. I'm like, I'm good. Because you're just in that mental space and zone. And it was weird. I didn't feel nervous sleeping on the lead at all at the British Open. I did feel nervous on Sunday, teeing off. But once I got into my routine, 3 holes in, I felt very comfortable.
So, and you've won, for most players, it seems like winning on home soil is such a patriotic thing. I know, like, you know, I've been a Brooke fan a long time, and she won the Canadian Open a year or two ago. And I actually just listened to a podcast where Mike Weir, his first tournament as a Canadian, he won the Air Canada Championship, which used to be a PGA Tour event. Lost in a playoff to Vijay Singh in the Open. We're still waiting for a Canadian to win an Open. And I saw that the South Africa Open is a tournament that you'll never miss. Just talk about the pride. Obviously, you loved representing SA in Rio. And just talk about the pride of winning on home soil and how much that means.
I think to any player winning on home soil, there's no better feeling, no matter how big or small the tournament is. Obviously, Brooke winning a Canadian Open, way bigger than me winning the South African Open, but deep down, there's just that pride factor. I won the South African Open here as an amateur for the first time. I was 14. I won it a 2nd time when I was 17 as an amateur, and then I finally cracked it as a pro 2 years ago, and it was very special to finally get it as a pro because it was kind of the monkey on my back. I try and make an effort to get home to play it every year. Like I said, I did say in an interview, it's my goal not to miss it. And luckily for me, it's always fallen somewhere in the Canada. It's normally the week before we head to Phoenix. So I will always do everything I can to try and get back to play that tournament.
Dave, you're a senior veteran out there caddying everything. What's it like for you while she's swinging the sticks out there and you're outside the rope and you really have nothing to say? How nervous are you for her?
Yeah, like, so I caddy for Madeline for the last, this is my third year with Madeline. And so we played the British, but unfortunately we missed the cut when Ash was in contention. But, you know, for me, caddying and then spectating, I'd much rather caddy than spectate and watch Ash because, you know, I'm standing outside the ropes and being that typical peanut carry. No, don't do that. You know, do that. I'd rather do that. And luckily, you know, I had a backpack and I filled it with beers. That helped a lot.
I would say
I was similar to a sniper because I was way ahead of the group and I was in the trees. I was on edge. I couldn't really watch. I didn't think I'd ever get that nervous because I don't feel that way when I caddy, you know. But yeah, that beers helped.
Speaking of your boss, Madeline, was it bittersweet to watch her win this year? You weren't on her bag. She had a family member, I believe.
Yeah, this is just one of those things that happens, you know. It definitely was bittersweet, but for me, it was just more sweet, you know, because she's put a hell of a lot of hard work in, and it's nice to see, you know, when you put that hard work in, it actually pays off. Obviously, I would have loved to have been there to share it with her.
Of course.
But it was, you know, just to know, okay, you know, Madeline can, in her mind can say, I can win out here, I can win every week, you know, so it's nice going forward, have that different mindset.
Yeah, I was very happy to see her win. I know she's a super stroker and that made me real pleased to see that. And I know you've been on her back for a couple of years. She's become a fan of hers. So that I enjoyed that. I knew it'd be more sweet than bitter, but I just had to ask that question.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
She's such a great player. I think that you're going to have some more success moving forward with that one, Dave. You're talking about following Ashley, drinking some beers and like, you know, trying to, you know, as athletes or ex-players and like the superstition level, like, oh, she just made birdie. Maybe I should keep drinking. You know, like as a player and a caddy, do you each have like any superstitions out there? Or, you know, go ahead, Dave.
Well, Casey, it was exactly that during the British. You know, every time, it was obviously all in my mind. Every time I took a sip of my beer, she seemed to hit a good shot. So I'm like thinking, okay, on these beers. But now, and this is the only thing I'd like to bring up with the British Open, is that the bar area is only like off the ninth tee. And there was only one place, so out there was nothing. So that was the issue. So then I started rationing my beer and taking smaller sips. And then, yeah, well, then she played a couple of average shots and I was like, oh, well, this stinks, you know? So for the final round, I decided I'm going to stock up with these beers. And I think I put, I don't know how many beers I put in there, but there was a lot. I mean, I sounded like the Jingle Man walking down the fairways. And I still remember who was commentating out there.
Jerry was commentating.
And I was walking like, you know, in line with the commentators, you know, so I'm away from the play. And he's like, man, what's that noise in your backpack? I said, Jerry, this is beer. Can I give you one? Looks like you need them. So, yeah. So that was good, though.
Did he wind up in his underwear that night? That sounds like a lot of beer sipping.
Yeah.
outside the door.
This Rick, it was quite funny to watch because obviously he's normally so calm and in control when he's caddying. But yeah, I was very fortunate also that we got a lot of friends and family that were watching me because we were so close to London. There's a lot of South Africans around. But going back to superstition, I'll only mark my golf ball. We got pins at the Olympics in Rio that you got to swap with different countries and collected these pins. So what Dave did is he took the South African one, which has the flag on and the rings and Rio 2016, and he cut the back off and made a marker for me. So that's what I use to mark my ball, and then I also only use a blue Sharpie to draw the line on.
Ashley, speaking of superstitions and routine, is there anything special you would wear or carry when you tee it up on the tournaments?
No, there's nothing special or anything. I do only like to use white tees. There's a few times throughout the season where I've had to go to Madeline because some tournaments, you know, you get blue and purple. And I'm like, Madeline, please tell me you have some white tees for me. She's like, yeah, keep them aside. I don't mind what color I use.
Tees have come up a lot in this kind of question, the superstition question, because I will only use wood tees, you know, and it seems like most pros are on the same, like those weird, like bendy, plasticky, apparently biodegradable. I don't know, but yeah, that's so pretty common there. I'm a stats guy. I'm a golf coach background, and you know, I always seem to dive into our guests a little bit. And I just want, you had similar like earnings in 2007 versus 2019, but that you got there in two totally different ways. 2017, you seem to have some really good, you know, a few top five type style finishes. But like lots more missed cuts where 2019, you seem to just like play way more consistently to get there. Can you talk about that a little bit and which you prefer and which one's like a more confident way moving forward?
For me, consistency is key. I'd rather be way more consistent and have, you know, 20 top 20 finishes and then you have that odd big week than have three top fives or three top threes and miss five, six cuts. And it has something is something my coach and I have worked on to become more consistent. And what we're talking about earlier, you know, the yellow and green zones is something that has a tribute to that, to be playing more consistently. And, you know, like I said, I'd been playing steady leading up to the British, felt a good week was coming, and lucky for me, that was the week it all seemed to click and it was a big purse to do it in.
Do you guys think we're going to get back to work here at the Dow? And who's your team partner, Ashley? For those listening, the Dow is the first tournament due back in July, and it is the schedule's only team event.
Yeah, obviously we're all holding thumbs and hoping we do. My playing partner is Sarah Kemp. She's an Aussie. I was actually chatting to her yesterday, you know, South Africans and Australians. We have such banter because we're both Southern Hemisphere. We have interests in the same sports. Cricket and rugby, and I said, so I never thought I'd see the day when a South African and an Aussie would be on the same team. But it'll be fun. We've known each other since our amateur days. We played amateur golf together, so we're hoping to get back there. My worry is, as well, is even if, say, the LPGA goes ahead with it, the way we're looking, I don't know if our borders are going to be open to travel, and I think I'm not the only one with that worry right now that's not in America. So we're going to have to just wait.
Yeah, Casey's been worried about that. He's up in Canada, if he can even come on down. So you haven't started making any arrangements, any travel plans? Because I know you'll have to be quarantined for 14 days if and when they ever let you out of your country. Have you started any arrangements for travel?
Nothing. We can't even start any arrangements right now because no one's flying in and out of South Africa. You can on a repatriation flight, so South Africans stuck overseas can get back. But other than that, our borders are completely shut to all travel. And by the sounds of things, it's not going to be opening for a while. So,
Commissioner Mike Wan said he's not going to start a field unless he's got at least 50% of the girls or ladies available to come over to the country. So we're still kind of holding our breath there. 80%, is that what it is? Well, yeah. We're holding our breath now. But this Thursday, the KLPG, they're teeing it up. There's a few LPG top. There's three of the top 10 that are playing this week, Thursday over in Korea. So they're, you know, they've released the lockdown. They said they've only had two new cases in the last week or so. So they're getting ready to play. And I'm sure we're all looking at them as a guinea pig to see how it all transpires and what's going to happen with our tours. The men start, they think, in June. We'll see how that flies.
Yeah, it's just a waiting game. And I think it's great that Mike did delay, you know, us starting in July. He knew he had those dates for the fall for Arkansas. So, you know, I think it helps us that aren't in the US, gives us more time to try to get to the States. Because, as you know, we've got to quarantine for the 2 weeks before too. So it's going to be tricky, but we'll do what we can because we just want to get back to playing golf.
Well, Mike says it's a responsibility and not a race. And he's got 75 days out that he has to plan for a tournament. So he's a very smart cookie, and it's good to have him on our side.
Yeah, definitely. We're very grateful that we have him on board and supporting us players. The LPGA have been fantastic throughout this whole thing.
Well, we're really conscious of your time here. I'm pretty much wrapping up. Ronnie, how you doing over there? Do you have any more questions for Ashley and Dave?
Yeah, a couple more things I wanted to touch on. This is kind of off topic and everything, but Vijay Singh is playing the Korn Ferry Tour over here. What do you think about pros stepping down to like the Symetra or even leagues lower than that to just kind of get some competitive rounds under their belt? Are you for that or against it?
Yeah, I think it's really tough, you know, especially, you know, golfers who have somebody like Vijay who has done so well, major winner, made plenty of money, and you know, the guys on the Korn Ferry, you know, they're trying to cut it and they're not earning as much money. So, you know, for me, as long as he's not taking away a spot, I don't know how they're doing it, if they're just adding one extra to the field.
Yeah, no, he's not taking away. It's actually TPC Sawgrass, is his home course. So I, you know, he's playing for that reason alone, but he just wanted to get some competitive reps. One other guy shouted at him, "You're a scumbag if you take the money." He doesn't know if he's going to take, I don't know if he's taking the money or not, but I believe it's fair. I mean, I think it's, as long as he's not taking away a spot, exactly. These guys are out there trying to grind and get away onto the big leagues. And I just think it's interesting. You know, I think he's, like I said, it's in his backyard. He's sleeping in his own bed. You got to, might as well go out and play.
So we all want to try to stay competitive and test ourselves as much as we can.
On the VJ thing, I read another thing there that there's like Phil Mickelson actually said, like VJ has done so much for the game of golf, and like the PGA is like a huge portion of what it is. He's earned the right to be, do and go and play whatever he wants. So I kind of thought that was like an interesting rebuttal and like, you know, like mic drop a little bit. But of course, you know, and on the other foot, there's like the Cactus Tour in Arizona, which is a small female tour. There's you know, I think it's done nothing but help that tour, but there seems to be quite a few LPGA players playing week in and week out on that one as well.
It definitely just helps promote it more. You know, and it's I think also there's another one, there's a few guys, Kevin Stuhlman, they're playing in also in Phoenix this week or somewhere in Arizona. You know, it's only, you know, raising the standard of their tournaments.
Yeah, and they just want to get some reps under their belt, some competition rounds, have a little something on the line that they're playing for instead of going in the backyard playing with their buddies. So I'm all for it.
The women's game doesn't need help, or the men's game doesn't need help promoting, but definitely going to benefit the women's game. And that's what we're trying to do is throw some get some players and caddies out there on the interweb and share some stories. So super, super stoked to have you guys sharing your time in South Africa, and hoping we can get down into the States and share some of those South African beers you're going to be bringing with you in the backpack. Dave's got just carry on full of beers and biltong, I hope.
I'll start the trek now to the States with my beers.
There you go. Hey, before we end this thing, I wanted to give a shout out to Ashley. It's a birthday yesterday. Congratulations, Ashley. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you, Ron. Appreciate it.
Can't wait to see you guys back there on tour. And thanks again for joining us here on Let's Talk Divots.
What a great episode that was. Thanks so much for tuning in. We are once again at Let's Talk Divots on all social media platforms. If you can go ahead, give us a like, a share, a comment. We'd appreciate it and look forward to bringing you another great guest next week.